The ether plays an equally large part in the seance room as it does with our radio instrument. It may seem strange to some when I say that our etheric body, which is an exact duplicate of our physical body, affects the ether surrounding it. Each one of us vibrates the ether in his or her own particular way. From the body of each one of us are emanating vibrations of a different degree. The vibrations of a man or woman in anger are different from those of a man or woman at peace. The vibrations of a person who enters the séance room in a definitely hostile attitude so affect the conditions that phenomena occur less easily. I know that it is often thought and said by people who investigate in this spirit that they never get results, and then they think that these results cannot possibly occur with others. If such people would only realize that a critical and keenly active mind does not upset conditions, and that they are not expected, nor asked, to put their reason in their pocket when they enter the séance room. I personally have never done so. I am as keenly critical today as I ever was, and if anything occurred in the séance room of a suspicious nature, I think I should be one of the first to notice it. Nevertheless, I generally get extremely good evidence of a supernormal nature. I prefer to treat the medium as I do any other person I meet. Because someone is a medium, it does not follow that he is a rogue and a knave. I admit that among mediums, as among every other class, there are some who are disreputable. I have met dishonest mediums, just as I have met dishonest people in my business and social life. Would we trust our body to every man who says that he has the power to heal it? Certainly not. We use our reason and our discretion, and if we are foolish, we shall probably suffer by letting our bodies be treated by someone who professes to be able to do something he has not the capacity to perform. Likewise, when you meet a medium, treat him as you would treat any other person you meet. If it is a trance sitting you are having in the daylight, judge by what is said as to whether it is supernormal or not. Judge as to whether it is possible for him or her to have obtained the information normally or not, and weigh up the pros and cons in a judicial manner. When sitting in the dark séance room for direct voice phenomena, make certain that the medium is not himself speaking. Besides this, weigh up the communications you receive, and find from them as to whether there is evidence of a personality apart from the medium and of the personality who purports to be speaking. This has been my plan throughout, keenly critical and yet never hostile, and so I have surrounded myself in consequence by what we term the best conditions. These are the conditions which surround the regular sitters at Sloane seances. They emanate vibrations which make it possible for those on the other side to get through to us, even if there should be another person present who is hostile. If his oscillation is not too strong, the emanations from the other sitters are strong enough to counteract his adverse emanations, and satisfactory results follow. Some people, however, even though they may not be hostile, never get results, through no fault of their own. We meet people in daily life whom we instinctively dislike, we know not why. These people may be liked by others with perfect justification, but, so far as we are concerned, they rub us up the wrong way, so to speak. If we said they upset our vibrations, it would be more correct. We are not harmonious as we do not get on together, and so it is that some people never get results because they emanate vibrations which make it impossible for those on the other side to get through to them. The vibrations of the two personalities clash and spoil the necessary conditions. That is why some people are bad sitters and others are good sitters. The average person can get on with most people in daily life, but there are others who are always rubbing people up the wrong way, or being rubbed up the wrong way, by those they meet, and that is why some people are able to get into contact with these finer vibrations while others cannot do so. Probably the great majority were in a similar position to myself in this respect. In fact, judging by the communications I have heard pass between people at seances and those of the other world, by far the majority must be similar to myself. We, however, cannot overlook the fact that there are certain individuals so constituted that they do not get on with other people here on earth, their vibrations being at variance, and so, when they go into a séance room, they repel any attempt made by the other world people to get in touch with them. It must not be thought that I mean that the conditions are exactly similar, because they are not, as some of the nicest and the most agreeable people find it impossible to get results. What I mean is that, with our earth experience of different people, it can be better understood how it is that some people may be good sitters and others may not be. Good sitters emanate vibrations which enable those attempting to communicate to get through their communications. The bad sitters emanate vibrations which make it impossible for this to occur. That is why it is eminently desirable to get people sitting together who emanate vibrations which do not clash one with the other. Harmony is the aim. Harmony is as necessary as a powerful medium, and that is what we have always tried to cultivate at these Sloan sittings. Nothing helps better to engender harmonious conditions than music. Musical vibrations, though they are carried by the atmosphere and not by the ether, have an indirect effect on the vibrations we send out into the ether, and so it is that we start our seances by singing, accompanied by the harmonium. Sloan prefers hymns to secular music, but this is not necessary. Any music has the desired effect, but at Sloan's seances hymns only are sung, and if conditions become tense, and voices become weak throughout the sitting, we sing again. This has generally the desired effect, namely the improving of the means of communication between the two sides. After the people assemble and engage in a preliminary talk, we sit down in a circle, the medium being one of us. Men and women as much as possible alternate, as here again conditions are helped by having the grosser and finer vibrations of the two sexes mixed. In the center of the circle are placed two megaphones, which have already been described. Conversation is general and encouraged, as talking helps conditions. There is generally a preliminary prayer, then a hymn, but before the first hymn is finished the medium has often relapsed into silence, and his head gradually nods, just as if he were going to sleep. His right hand is taken hold of by the person sitting on his right side and his left eye hand by the person on his left. The light is put out and we all join hands, forming a chain, and sit like this throughout the proceedings. 64. The singing continues, and after the first hymn another is sung, but by the time the third is finished Sloan is in deep trance and we hear mutterings coming from his mouth. These mutterings gradually assume more detail and we hear words being formed, indistinctly at first, but gradually becoming more and more distinct and better heard. Then with a shout white a feather, the control, announces his presence, good evening, friends, white a feather here now, medium spirit out of his body and me in control, me here all right, me can make his mouth speak what me want to say. Good evening, everybody. Such is generally his salutation, and we all say, good evening, Whitey, and express our pleasure at hearing him speak again. Usually the first question we ask him relates to the conditions, are they good or are they bad? Whitey is a pessimist of the deepest dye. I have been told that the pessimist is one who has always lived with an optimist, and I think that Whitey's friends must all be optimists because he invariably tells us that the conditions are bad and that nothing will happen. We know, however, not to take this engaging personality too seriously, and we always try to take a brighter view and say that we are sure things will come all right. His pessimism is generally unjustified, but he never seems to learn from experience, so we hope that the condition is only temporary, and that, when B returns to his abode with the great majority at the end of the seance, his outlook on life there is tinged with a less somber hue. However, his pessimism keeps us amused, just as we can be amused by those on earth who are always looking on the black side of things. We try to cheer him up and ask him what he has been doing since we last met, and the conversation proceeds in an animated way, he replying in his quaint English to our remarks. This proceeds for perhaps 10 minutes or a quarter of an hour, during which time, so our pessimistic friend tells us, the people in his world are working to set up the means of communication by the direct voice. We wait patiently for the result, and are generally not kept too long in suspense. The talking is proceeding when suddenly a strong voice from somewhere up in the ceiling speaks to us, wishing us good evening, to which we reply. Of this new personality we then inquire if we can expect good results, and receive. The cheery response that conditions are good and it is hoped that those on his side waiting to speak will manage to get through. Then another voice speaks, telling someone perhaps not to sit with his legs crossed, or reference is made to something which is of interest to someone present. "Mr. Lang, I saw you and Mrs. Lang talking to your gardener yesterday."
"Oh, really?" replies Mr. Lang.
"Yes, you were telling him that you wanted a rose tree taken from beside the house and put in another part of the garden."
"Well, my friend, you are right, I did so. Is there anything else you saw or heard?"
The conversation continues in an animated way between the voice and Mr. Lang, and ends up by Mr. Lang saying, "Well, my friend, though I did not see you, you must have been there as everything you tell me occurred." Then things become more personal. A voice will speak in front of a person present, claiming acquaintanceship, giving both name and earth address, and referring to some personal matter. "I well remember an incident which was very impressive. A voice spoke to a man sitting near me, giving a woman's name, to which he replied. She then referred to his children by name and their various temperaments, and gave some special advice as to how he should deal with the eldest boy who was especially troublesome. Afterwards he told me the voice was that of his recently deceased wife, and she had spoken just as she would have done on earth, knowing all the characteristics of the family, and he concluded with these words, 'Neither the medium, nor anyone present, knows anything about me or my family.'" Another woman's voice, on this occasion, also spoke to a Colonel MacDonald, saying that she was his mother, and had been with him at communion the previous day at Portree in Skye. "He told me afterwards that no one present knew he had just arrived that day from Portree, and that he had attended communion there the previous day." Everything is heard by us sitting listening, and so it goes on, one voice after another coming up in front of the person addressed and giving evidence of his or her identity. We may hear, if conditions are good, some 30 or 40 different voices speaking to the people present, but, if conditions are bad, only 2 or 3 voices speak, and these very indistinctly, invariably. However, the trumpets are continually moving about the room, when not being spoken through. 66. I have had them previously rubbed with phosphorus, and thus seen them floating round the room and reaching as high as the ceiling. Sitters are gently touched by them, and, on request, on any part of the body, without mistake, and at the first attempt. No fumbling, always the same clean gentle touch. Then they may give us a musical interlude, either by tapping the trumpets on the floor or by tapping each together. We hear the trumpets go right up to the ceiling and use the ceiling as a drum. Lights of about the size and shape of half a crown are moving about the room most of the time, but can never be caught. Always, when you let go your neighbor's hand and try to seize one, it moves away. All this, be it remembered, takes place in complete darkness, and every hand is held round the circle, including the hands of the medium, who never leaves his chair. Normally, it is quite impossible to accomplish. After a séance, I have sat down with others in the dark, and we have attempted to do with the trumpets what we have experienced during the séance, but this point need not be labored as no one can see in the darkness, and what the trumpets have done during the séance cannot be done by any human being without the power of sight. Similarly, no human being in the dark, holding a phosphorescent light, can tell when one of the sitters is going to snatch at it, and withdraw it in time. These phosphorescent lights, like the trumpets, are moved by intelligences to whom our darkness is non-existent, and who belong to a different order of light from that which we experience. After about 3 hours it becomes evident that the time is coming when farewells will have to be taken. The voices become less distinct and Whitfield tells us that not much further more can be said, Whitefeather himself being the last to say goodbye. Gradually Sloane comes out of the trance condition, the lights are relit, and he invariably asks if we have had good results. Throughout it all he has been quite unconscious to everything that has taken place, so the question is a natural one. Very quickly he returns to normal, and we then discuss between ourselves what has taken place. Such is a description of an average sitting with this remarkable medium.
The next morning's newspapers will have nothing to say of what occurred at Sloane's house, though it was of vital interest and importance to every member of the human race. Wireless programmers of the following evening will be eagerly read by wireless enthusiasts, who are eager to hear the voice of someone talking about matters relating to this world in which we live, but no account will be found there of those talks we have had with our friends, who have lived on this earth and passed into another world, who are able to tell us how they are living and what their conditions now are. We are very much creatures of the present. The next world to many who ever think about it is so distant that it is far beyond their mental grasp. How few of us realize its nearness and the possibility, given the required conditions, of receiving therefrom information and instruction which are just as useful and helpful to mankind as anything that comes from a human voice through our radio transmitter. Chapter 6. The Voices. I say with all the strength and force at my command that there is continuity of all life, that nothing is ever lost, that communication is possible, and has been had with those in the afterlife in many ways. My effort has been to create a condition in which it became possible for spirit people to clothe with physical substance their organs of respiration, so they could talk to us when in earth life. It has been my privilege to hear their voices, best of all methods, hundreds of times. Thousands of individuals have spoken, using their own vocal organs, and I have answered. From this has come great knowledge, facts beyond the learning of men, nor found in any books, and it is my privilege to give them to you. Randall. In the last chapter one gave you a description of a séance from our point of view, and in this one I shall try to describe it from the viewpoint of those who spoke to us. What follows is not the product of my imagination. I am telling as dearly as words permit what has been told me by voices which did not belong to this physical world of ours. Every word could be heard distinctly, and was taken down on paper at the time. 68. Before, however, proceeding further, let us just again understand a little more about ourselves and our physical world. I have already mentioned that much would be said in this book about vibrations, and the person who cannot think in terms of vibrations can no more understand the universe in general, and the particular subject of this book, than a man can understand finance if he has no knowledge of arithmetic. The entire universe is just one gigantic scale of vibrations, but only an infinitesimal number affect our senses. Let me make this clearer. When we see an object, what we see is its vibrations. These travel to us from the object by means of ether waves, impinge on that extremely sensitive organ, the eye, are thence conveyed to that other sensitive organ, the brain, and from the brain to the mind. The mind then transforms them into a mental image. Our mind is composed of a plastic substance capable of being molded by these vibrations into a picture, and, when we see a table, it is really not the table we see but the mental image formed in our mind by the vibrations given off by the electrons in the atoms which make up the table. This will perhaps be better understood if we again go back to our wireless set. We do not hear the speaker's voice in our receiver. His voice vibrates the atmosphere in the room from which he broadcasts. These vibrations affect a drum-like instrument, which in turn retards or accelerates an electric current. This current sends off waves into the ether, which likewise retard or accelerate the electric current passing through our aerial. This current passes through our receiving set and vibrates the drum of the loudspeaker. This vibration sets up vibrations in the atmosphere in the room in which we are sitting, which impinge on our eardrums. Thence they are conveyed to our brain, and then to our mind, which produces mental images from what is heard. So with our sense of touch, the vibrations an article gives off, after passing through our nerves and brain, vibrate our mind, and we have the sensation of touch. Each different substance throws off a different number of vibrations, and we can, by touch, realize if we are holding a wooden object or a cotton fabric. But our sense of touch is not nearly so acute as our sense of sight. So we sometimes cannot by touch alone comprehend what we are touching. Now the physical world is made up of a certain range of vibrations which affect our senses, but these are only a very small number of the vibrations which are known to exist. The vibrations which make up the physical world we see vary from about 34,000 to 64,000 waves to the inch, and that is what is called the visible spectrum of the spectroscope, between the infrared and the ultraviolet. This now brings me to the point I wish to make clear, firstly, that we sense only waves between two fixed points, and secondly that there are an enormous number of vibrations beyond the ultraviolet and the infrared which exist though unsensed by us. Now I come to what I am told about the means used to speak to us by what we call the direct voice, by those who have lowered their vibrations for a time and spoken to me on many subjects dealing with their order of life. How is it possible for their higher vibrations to be reduced sufficiently to vibrate our atmosphere? Let us consider the growth of a child from the moment of conception to the time of death, and then what follows beyond, and if we do so correctly, it all becomes much more simple to understand. Conception is only possible when mind associates itself with etheric and physical substances. Mind is of a different order from matter, it is substance, we have no other name for it, vibrating far beyond the ultraviolet. This finer substance unites a male cell with a female cell and then development begins in the dark, and this is only possible at first in darkness as light would make this materialization impossible. This finer substance gathers round it physical matter, or, in other words, matter vibrating between the infrared and the ultraviolet. This finer substance thinks from the very start. It forms the framework for the grosser matter to gather round, until a body in due time is formed. After this body is strong enough to withstand our light vibrations, it leaves the darkness and we have what is called birth. Footnote: every life germ is a trinity, containing mind, etheric matter and physical matter, the two latter constituting the body. Each physical cell has thus a duplicate etheric cell, so that the etheric body is cell for cell similar to the physical body. A soul or a mind, either word will do, has arrived to function in the physical world. The process of development continues, physical matter continues to be gathered round the etheric framework, and, along with physical growth, mental growth goes on. This latter never stops, though, as old age comes on. The mind is unable to function with the same ease. However, no matter when death now comes, individuality is definitely established because to the mind belongs the qualities which make us what we are. The physical head shields the mind from physical vibrations, and this function is likewise performed by the etheric head when we become etheric beings, as in etheria the mind must be protected from etheric vibrations. It is the individualized mind which produces the individual, and, in fact, is the individual because to it belong the memory, the affections and all that makes up our character and personality. At death a physical garment is discarded to return to earth whence it came, but the mind and the etheric body pass on to a new environment. No change of location occurs immediately, and the etheric being after death remains for a short time in the same place as where death took place. As, however, the etheric body belongs to a higher range of vibrations, it now responds to them, and is unable to respond to physical vibrations now that the physical body is discarded. No longer does it sense its physical body, but only the things of the etheric world. When on earth, matter vibrating within certain fixed limits impinged on the mind through the physical body. But, in the etheric world, vibrations of the higher range impinge on the etheric body and through it to the mind. The mind is then aware of only these higher vibrations, it appreciates the finer structure of the etheric body and realizes the form the body takes, because the etheric body vibrates just as did the physical body. Everything therefore appears to be just as real and solid as it was on earth, because the mind and the etheric body are now functioning in a new range of vibrations with which they are in tune. What to us on earth seems ethereal, and to which we give the name spirit, is not so to the etherians who regard us on earth in the same ethereal way as we regard them. The earth body, from the time of conception, attached itself to etheric substance which was fashioned according to what the mind directed. Consequently, when the physical body was put aside at death, The same mind still persisted, its hitherto unseen etheric body taking the place of the physical body. The dead man is still alive and unchanged in appearance, and he takes farewell of his old body. Other. The active cooperators. We require an individual, the medium, possessed with certain vital forces, or substances, to some extent more than normal. To these we, the sitters, supply our own normal vitality. That constitutes our part in the proceedings, while the rest is done by those who are working with us beyond the veil. As my investigations progressed, so was I impressed with the complications of the procedure in the etheric world which were necessary to produce the conditions to make communication possible. A group of etheric men who are expert in the handling of organic chemical substances work along with us. Immediately we assemble, they get to work to do their part. The group consists of a director of operations, one or more chemists, one who moves the trumpet in the direction an etheric communicator wishes to speak, and one who gathers the substances from the medium and the sitters by connecting them up with the chemist who draws from them the necessary material. This extends from the medium and the sitters to a central point, and the substance drawn from them is gathered by the chemist into an etheric howl into which he also adds etheric substances of his own. Another of the group helps etheric newcomers to speak, telling them what to do. Others keep away those whose only interest in the proceedings is curiosity, and White Feather, to whom I have already referred, considers himself the most important of all, as he is detailed off to give warning when a seance is to take place, so that all the operators may be present and at their posts. Such is a general description of the modus operandi of the direct voice, on the physical and on the etheric sides of life. But, given the necessary conditions, what is the explanation of all that takes place? First of all, we must accept their statement that the etheric body is in every way a duplicate of the physical body, both as regards all internal and external organs. In etheric life, communication takes place in the same way as in earth life. The vocal organs vibrate their atmosphere, the tongue moves, the lungs draw in and expel the equivalent to our air, everything proceeds as it proceeds here on earth, the only difference being that it is all taking place in matter of a much finer structure and at a much more rapid rate of vibration. Proceed from a materialized entity in the center of the circle. The power is not always strong enough to maintain this form of communication throughout the entire sitting. What happens is this. The communicator who wishes to speak controls the medium and speaks through him. The communicator has not, however, the same control over the medium as his regular controllers, and the voice produced is sometimes not above a whisper. The voice is conveyed from the medium's mouth by means of a materialized ectoplasmic or psychic tube to the trumpet, which amplifies the voice so that it can be heard. Speaking under these circumstances, the speaker stands behind the medium, whose etheric body for the time being is detached from his physical body. In other words, the medium is in trance. The communicator is thus able to control the medium's vocal organs. There is an etheric connecting link, which has the same effect on the medium's muscles as the atmospheric waves have on two tuning forks tuned to the same pitch. As the vibrations of one act on the other, so the two sets of vocal organs, those of the etheric speaker and those of the medium, act in unison. Thus what the etherian says the medium says, both sets of organs working in harmony. That information satisfied me up to a point, but the question was how the sound was produced. Our lips form the words, our larynx causes the sound. I then asked what caused the sound, and was told that the medium's larynx was used for this purpose, and that the sound was conveyed from it by means of the etheric tube to the trumpet. It was made clear, however, that what was carried from the medium to the trumpet was not air from the medium's lungs. The larynx is used to cause the sound, but not by means of air passing through the vocal cords. The atmosphere is vibrated by a method of their own, and I was told I must accept the fact that the larynx was used to produce the sound, which was carried to the trumpet from the etherian who was speaking. There is no question, my informant insisted, of the messages in any way being influenced by the medium's mind, as his mind does not come into the question at all. They do not act through the medium's mind, but directly on his vocal organs. The mind of the etheric speaker is in complete control, and the medium's brain is switched off for the time being.